let's talk about Crimson Glory, because the news is that Crimson Glory is back together with new music.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, three of us original members, Dana, the drummer, Jeff, the bassist, and myself have brought the band back with a couple new members. Travis Wills on vocals from Dallas, Texas, and Mark Borgie Borgmeyer from here in Sarasota.
Now, you've played with Mark before, right?
Yeah. Mark's played with me for years on some of my solo albums and Ben Jackson Groove, Avenging Benji, and Jeff and Dana and I have known him for years, so he seemed like the obvious choice for our revamping of Crimson Glory.
Sure. Now, let me ask you this. When did this idea come about to decide to put it back together?
There was this really great singer named Mystique, a guy from Greece, and he was brought to our attention by a friend of ours named Tom McDine. And the guy from Mystique really caught our attention, got us kind of interested in maybe doing something with the band again. He sounded a lot like Midnight, which was appealing for us at first. And then we worked with the guy for almost a couple years, writing some songs and discussing the possibility of him joining the band. And ultimately, it didn't really work out with him, but we didn't really agree on everything we were doing with the songwriting. But he was a cool guy, but it didn't really work out. So he's going to go ahead and do a solo album. And we wish him well with that. But that's kind of what got us reinterested, actually, is our friend bringing this guy to our attention. And when it didn't work out with him, Jeff and Dana and I were already kind of amped up with some of the new songs that we were working on. And we said, well, we'll find somebody and we'll just do this. And we did. You know, we looked at a couple other singers before we kind of happened upon the guy we have now, Travis.
And what excited you about Travis? I mean, what was it that he brought to the band?
Well, you know, what excited me was, I guess, he sent us a version of him singing one of our classic songs, Painted Skies, and it sounded really good. He was really capturing the emotion of the song and didn't sound exactly like Midnight, like he was trying to copycat him. He kind of had his own sound, his own voice, but he was really, really nailing it and sounding really good with it. So I was like, you know, this guy's something else. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one thing I noticed about his vocals is he's got a really great voice that fits the music, and it doesn't sound like Midnight. He doesn't, it's like you said, he's not trying to sound like Midnight.
Yeah. And I think with the guy that originally had us interested, Mystique, he probably sounded too much like Midnight. Maybe some of the fans might have loved that. Some of them might have been like, I don't know, hey, there's only one Midnight guy, what are you doing? You know, he was really trying to sound like him. So I give him credit for that. But maybe better, I think now in retrospect, that we have a guy like Travis who has more of his own voice, his own identity, you know, and he's not trying to just be, you know, another clone of Midnight, but kind of his own guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's good. I think, when you guys had Todd in the band, the stuff I heard with him was almost, in my opinion, that way. Like it was almost, he was trying to sound like Midnight a little too much. And I also think he's doing that in Queensryche as well, but although it sounded great, it was still, you know, it's great to hear you guys with a fresh voice to you.
Oh, thanks for saying that, because that's kind of our feeling too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, how many songs do you have recorded?
Right now we have two songs fully recorded, mixed, ready to reveal to the world. We've already put one out with a lyric video, which maybe you've checked that one out.
Mm-hmm. How do you pronounce that?
Triskaidekka.
Triskaidekka. It's like, what, 13 or something like that?
Yeah, it's the Greek word for 13. I happened upon this term and saw that there was a term called triskaidekaphobia that means the intense fear of the number 13. This is a phrase, a medical terminology. I guess they came up with it back in like 1910, where this was put in the dictionary, this word triskaidekaphobia, which just means that, the fear of the number 13. So that's kind of what the song and the theme of the song is based around.
Okay. And what's the name of the second song?
Second one is called Indelible Ashes.
Okay. And when will we get to hear that one?
Pretty soon, probably another month off.
Mm-hmm. Is there plans for a full record?
Yeah, we're writing and working on a bunch of other songs right now. We've got probably, you know, another half a dozen songs in the pot, you know, and things are coming together really well. We have a couple faster ones. So, you know, one that's a little more, you know, maybe a little more ballady. Just trying to create some nice diversity in the album like we had in our earlier albums too.
Yeah, some of those earlier albums, I've been a fan of Crimson Glory for a while, you know, growing up in the same area and stuff. I always heard about you guys, and Transcendence is probably where I first found you guys. And the video for Lonely, you remember making that video?
Yeah.
I just watched it the other day, and I don't mean to laugh, but you know, it was the times. It was the times. That's what I can say.
Sure, it looks a little dated now, you know?
Yeah, a little bit. So you're going to make an album. What about touring plans?
Yeah, well, we already have a couple things going on with that. We have one festival called the Keep It True Festival in Germany, and we're headlining that festival on October 5th, 2024 this year. And it's a big festival, like a two-day festival in Germany, a Friday night and then a Saturday night. You know, a bunch of bands each day. And the Saturday night, the last night, the main night, we're headlining. So we're looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think on the bill that day with us is YNT. I think they're on right before we come on.
Okay. When's the last time you guys played over there?
2012.
So it's been a while. So
yeah, right. With Todd, yeah.
The feedback that I've seen online has been pretty positive. Are you seeing that as well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Happy to see that, for sure.
Were you nervous putting a song out, wondering how it was going to go over?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you never know, but when we put this new music together, we were feeling, you know, pretty strong that both songs are really good and that they sound like Crimson Glory. They have that sound, they have that essence. And we're pretty confident that people would like them. Mm-hmm. Of course, you never know. You just sometimes put something out there and see, you know, how people respond to it. But we're not so cocky to just automatically assume everyone's going to love it. But
yeah.
Out with pretty high hopes that everybody would like it, and so far so good. Everybody's really thumbs up. It sounds like Crimson, sounds like the old days, those kind of comments.
Pretty
cool to see everybody's really, really digging it a lot.
Was there any thoughts of maybe coming out as under a different name, or was it always going to be Crimson Glory?
Yeah, it needed to be, you know, because a band like us and that name, it's a brand, it's a following that we built over, you know, 35 plus years now. And if the three of us just came out and said, hey, a few of the members of Crimson Glory are back together and we have a new band, but it's called this, you're starting from scratch at that point. Mm. I mean, you can say, yeah, it says all the members of Crimson Glory, but if you don't have that name and that brand, then nobody's going to care. You know, none of the labels would probably be that interested in signing it. None of the festival promoters would be that interested in having us. if it was even the same guys playing the same songs, but with a new name. What they really want, what everybody wants, is the name.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. How many of the older songs are you going to be playing live?
A lot of them. So if we come out, when we come and play, say, the Keep It True Festival, we're headlining, so we got to do like a good hour and a half set that night. We'll do probably an 18-song set list. Probably only be maybe two of our new songs on that set list, and two or three maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Be on the new album, will be in the list, and everything else will be classic songs from the first two albums.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to go back and relearn these songs, or have you already been playing them in your other bands?
No, I haven't really been playing them in my other bands or anything as of any time recently. But no, I don't really have to go back and relearn them. I remember everything pretty well. Some brushing up. You know, we're all talking amongst ourselves and about what we want the set list to be, which songs we're going to include, and you know, what type of order. So that being said, everybody, myself and Jeff and everybody's probably doing work on all these songs. And then when we come together to start rehearsing, I think it'll fly, you know, really fast and nicely. It'll just fall right into place.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about John? Because I know John's got he's got other priorities right now in his life that he deals with. Does he have any involvement in any of the studio stuff, the writing or anything like that?
No, not this time around. You know, he's just completely away from it. You know, around 2012, when we were sort of writing with Todd for what we were going to make a new album with Todd, you know, we started planning some specific evenings in which we'd all write together. And John was just not showing up that much. He came to a few and then sort of slacked off on it. And that's one of the reasons that led to Todd just kind of pulling out and going full force with Queensryche. And, you know, that was over 10, 11 years ago now. And we haven't really had any contact with John in the last 10 years.
Oh, no.
Any of us. You know, wish him well and everything, but yeah, I think from the time his son was born, he just kind of removed himself from the music business and wants to play the dad role, and that's understandable.
Sure. Yeah, I saw he posted about it and wished you guys the best on it.
It's just not really in his priority list right now to be doing music and records and stuff. So,
How about the album cover? Is that image that we see, is that going to be the album cover?
Most likely, yeah.
I got to say, I thought that was Dana when I first saw it.
Really?
When I first got a glimpse of it, I was like, but the hair and stuff, you know?
That's funny. The new gold. Looking thing,
yeah.
Somebody else said that too.
Did they? Like, see?
Yeah, that's funny. I'm gonna tell them that.
It's not a bad thing. It just, you know, you look at it quickly, it's like, oh, it's Dana.
It's kind of funny because back in the days when we were all young guys, you know, we kind of had nicknames for each other and stuff, and we would call Dana Skeletor. So now that you look at that, you know, thing, it's like a skull and you're saying it's Dana. So we're going to laugh about that. So yeah, it's the new modern day Skeletor. It's Dana.
Every time you look at that album cover, now you're going to think of that. He's going to probably want to change the album cover.
You know, a guy we're working with who designed our new website came up and with that artwork for us, and initially it's designed for a t-shirt for us. You know, we're already pushing the t-shirt with that art on it. And but the more we looked at it, we're like, you know, this is really cool. It's an original piece of art that he made for us. and we thought maybe this would just be a good album cover. So,
mm-hmm.
But there's a little time probably between now and the time that we complete the rest of the album. So you never know. We might come up with something different art-wise, yeah. Now and then. But we all like that piece, and you know, it's something we may use.
It's pretty badass looking, I think.
Yeah, I think. Well, thank you. It could be a good way to go.
Are you releasing these songs right now on your own and shopping to labels, or what are we doing label-wise?
Yeah, we put out the one song, you know, on made a lyric video and just put it up on YouTube to just see how people react to it. And we've already had a couple of labels reach out to us and make some offers. And it's just we just want to take a little time and think about it before we just jump on the very first deal that's presented to us. We just got the single out within this last month, and we're just going to let it ride for a little bit, maybe get the second one out. You know, we're busy working on the rest of the songs. We're writing and demoing and sharing ideas with each other. And we'll just see, you know, what other labels and might come into the mix of the conversation over the next, you know, 2 to 4 months or so. And I'm sure a deal will be reached between us and somebody.
Mm-hmm. Is that the goal, is to get it on a label? You don't want to do it yourself.
Yeah, I think so. Because, you know, there's good and bad things about being on a label and also doing it yourself. But I think, you know, with a label, that there's so much they can do for us that we probably wouldn't have time or the resources to do on our own.
Mm-hmm. It's so hard to tour nowadays too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, our first little tour we're going to do in Germany is just going to be for, you know, maybe a week and a half. We're going over there. We're going to do the Keep It True and maybe a few other shows while we're over there. And going back to Europe in March of 25 to do the Up the Hammers Festival in Athens, Greece, and a couple other shows around Greece, one in Cyprus. So we have a few things cooking already for 24 and 25 as far as live outings over in Europe.
Are we going to see you guys out in the States at all?
Yeah, eventually. I imagine, you know, we all kind of have businesses that we run and work obligations, and you know, we're running lives just like real people. We're not, you know, living the rock dream 24/7, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
we have to work around people's lives and schedules as far as how much we can really tour, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to choose the festivals and the gigs that really are going to showcase the band in the best light and really make the most sense for us. Because, you know, none of us are in a position where we can go out and tour for 4 months at a time or 6 months at a time right now.
Mm-hmm.
Unless things, you know, if we get out there and after the first couple of outings and tours and we get the new album out, if things are snowballing to the pace of maybe being able to make a living off this machine, then maybe we will work our real occupations less and push the band trigger more, you know?
Sure. Sure. Well, I mean, best of luck to you on it. I mean, so far what I've heard sounds good. I will say it, the first time I heard it, I was like, okay. And then I listened to it again. And the more I listened to it, the more I liked it.
Nice.
That's
thank
how
you.
It hit me. But let's go back a little bit, if you don't mind. Let's go back to, because I'm curious about you guys coming out of the Sarasota-Bradenton area way back when. I, you know what I didn't know as well is that you guys formed in 1979. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, that's when Dana, the drummer, and I really first started playing together as teens, you know. But I don't know if you could say that's when Crimson Glory actually formed. You know, right. That's when Dana and I started our first band. You know, dating back to when we called it Pierced Arrow. If you've seen some of the old band bios, it kind of mentions that band, and that's where we started it all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I remember growing up out there, and you guys were rehearsing, I think it's probably in the early 80s. Did you have a warehouse next to Atheist?
I sure did.
Yeah. Okay. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, those were some good times. We'd all be out sometimes rehearsing on the same nights. So there'd be a lot of friends hanging around in the parking lot in front of both warehouses. And maybe we'd practice and we'd go down and watch them play a few songs. Sometimes they'd come over and hang with us and watch us. And be a little
fun times.
Fun times.
Yeah. So how did you guys get noticed out of the Sarasota-Bradenton area?
Well, you know, when we eventually grew into being Crimson Glory and just doing all originals, and we started demoing a bunch of songs we were writing, we ended up at More Sound Recording and did a 5-song demo up there. Came out really, really good. The demo just kind of caught the attention of Dan Johnson from Par Records. And Dan also had some connections with people at Roadrunner Records in Europe, and people like Metal Mike, the writer from Art Shock magazine. And the word started to spread a little bit about Crimson and the demo that we had created at More Sound. Mm-hmm. And which led to Dan Johnson and Par Records offering us a record deal.
Okay. And there you jumped to Roadrunner, right? From there?
Yeah. Because Par Records is more like the American label we were on, and that he licensed it out to Roadrunner for Europe.
I see. Okay. I have a cassette somewhere around here. It's a recorded cassette of, I think, the songs on your first album, and it might have some other stuff on there. I don't know if you recorded other songs during that time, but I'm not sure what's on the tape. I need to find it.
There was a song called Dream Dancer that was part of the recording session for the first album, but that song wasn't really on the album. So we put that song out as a single. During the first era, that was the amount of the songs we had. I think the 8 songs that were on the album, and the 9th song was Dream Dancer.
Okay. Yeah, I got to find that thing. I don't know what's on there.
Dream Dancer is kind of long. I think one of the reasons that we didn't put it on the record was back then, vinyl records, you could only put so many songs on them because the size of the grooves had to be, so wide. If you tried to put too many songs, you know how it is. Mm-hmm. Back then, a lot of records you would own or buy only had like 8 or 9 songs.
Yeah.
They could put 12, 13 songs on a record like they do on a disc.
Yeah. All right. Well, now Astronomica, right? That's what it's called. That's how you pronounce it. That was originally written for Midnight to sing on, correct?
Yeah.
Jeff
and John were the guys who decided around the late 90s that they wanted to try to bring the band back after we had sort of been away from the scene for almost a decade in the 90s. And they originally reached out to Midnight to do the record. And after a couple of meetings with him, I don't know if he wasn't showing signs of being up for it or whatever, something like that was going on. So Jeff and John then decided to reach out to Wade Black and ask him to do the project.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I would love to hear those songs with Midnight's vocals.
They did want to work with Midnight on that. And like I said, I wasn't really part of the band during some of the 90s, and it was Jeff and John who decided to bring the band back. And they eventually did reach out to me to rejoin the band, but it wasn't really until that album was pretty much completed, the Astronomical.
Okay. All right, Ben. Well, listen, man, I'm excited for you guys. I was excited to hear the band coming back. I think good things are going to happen for you guys.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate the good vibes.
Oh, yeah. If you ever get out in the States, or if I ever get down to Florida and you guys are playing down there, I got to come out and see you. I saw the band. I don't think I seen Crimson Glory with you in the band, though. I saw them on at the Rocket Club on the Strange and Beautiful tour, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The ill-fated Rocket Club gig.
I love the Rocket Club.
I love the Rocket Club, too. I've played there a couple times. Crimson Glory played there on the Transcendence tour. Mm. Full original band with the masks and everything. That was a fun gig. The masks, you know about that, right?
Yeah. I remember the mask.
We played the Rocket Club in 89. I remember Rick Allen from Def Leppard was living in Tampa at the time. He came out to the gig and he was hanging around with us in the backstage area drinking beers and stuff. It was kind of cool. And so that was my recollection of playing the Rocket Club with Crimson. And then I played there again in the 90s, or maybe 93 or something, with my band Parrish. So the Rocket Club's definitely a cool place. I didn't go to the gig where they played there on the Strange and Beautiful tour. But I do know a little bit about what happened. They played the gig, and you were there? Was it a good gig?
Yeah, I thought so.
What I heard is Midnight didn't have a very good gig, or he was having some issues remembering some parts or this or that. I don't know, but all I do know is that they fired him the next day after that gig.
I don't remember. I mean, back then there was a lot of drinks going on too, I recall being impressed with Ravi. I was watching Ravi a lot.
Yeah, he was definitely a showman.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I don't know, that was the first gig of that tour, and they did it, and Midnight was let go the next day, and they replaced him with a singer named David Van Landing, and he's that tour.
I don't know if I agree with that.
It was a short tour. It was only like maybe a couple of weeks of dates they did in America. Dave Van Landing was the singer on the tour. Midnight was only on the very first show of the tour. After the tour ended, they sort of disbanded the band completely for like I said, almost the next 10 years.
So, I wasn't aware of that was this only show on that tour.
The Beautiful era of the band kind of came and went really quick. They made the record. First outing with Midnight was kind of a blunder, and they let him go, and then they just disbanded a couple weeks later.
Midnight was so good, though. I mean, he's probably one of my favorite rock vocalists. I was doing some tour managing with Neurotica for a little bit, and we did a private party out on the key, and Midnight played as well. He played acoustically, though. And I remember watching him just singing, man.
He shined at that, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. So good.
He could just sit and entertain a room just by himself, you know, on the acoustic and sing. He would just put, you know, chills down your spine. He was so good.
Yeah.
And live with the band and the full lineup, he had nights as well where he was just mesmerizing and amazing. And like no other. You know, he's a very rare individual, you know, and then, you know, he struggled a little bit, you know, with drinking during the Transcendence tour, and it sort of escalated in his life, you know, in the following years, and sort of caused him some problems as far as, you know, performing at his top peak, you know.
Yeah.
But we do remember him and in the highest, you know, amount of honor and light. And we know what he could really do when he was at the top of his game and he was really something else.
Yeah. 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 He was special. Definitely.
Yeah, so much.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Great friend. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Ben. Well, listen, man, again, best of luck on the future of Crimson Glory.
Sure. Appreciate it, man. Good talking with you.
Yeah. Good catching up.
Awesome. Okay.
All right, buddy.
Yeah. Good night.